Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. I am the Director of Digital Services at Eastwick Communications. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today on this lovely Bay Area day, I have the pleasure of speaking to a lovely man, Chris Heuer of Social Media Club, among many other things. How are you today, Chris?
I'm good and a lot better after that really sweet introduction. Wow.
Well, you're
I'm important and lovely and everything. And
wait till you see the blog post I did. You know, I'm fond of you. I gotta say. But I'm gonna
really
challenge
what you're
you.
Doing, by the way, inside of an agency, because it's not easy right now to be in that role of changing an entire agency's attitude and perspectives to be engaging in these new ways. So
luckily, there's some very open ears at the top, so I'm lucky in that respect. But I wanted to give you a challenge. This is actually my first half hour program, and we are very talky people. So the challenge I want to give you is give us your bio as complete as possible in 1 minute.
Well, I can't do it as complete as possible, but you know, I've got a communications, law, economics, and government degree. Double major, double minor, so it's actually perfectly suited to dealing with all these issues around social media and digital strategy. And I started an interactive firm back in 94. I've taught web design and interactive marketing. I do software architecture, user experience, help with creative social media strategies. And, you know, if I had to look at one thing that was really influential was actually a brief stint that I did at the U.S. Mint, helping launch their e-commerce programs, where it helped me think differently about how companies or organizations engage with markets. And from that experience, I started looking at governments, nonprofits, and for-profits as organizations, how organizations serve the markets that they actually engage with, how they create value. And as a result of that, that's been really helpful in understanding and implementing social media programs.
And I especially like the law background. When was the last time you were talking to a client and you said something to the effect of the most recent case law says?
Oh, God. Actually, that was a part of a project I did last year in helping somebody understand the legal implications of community online and the impact of actually moderating. And there's a bunch of case law that I can't remember offhand right now that talks about whether or not, you know, if you're moderating conversation, then that basically means you're responsible for the content. Yeah, versus if you just let it flow and, you know, have your obscenity policies and what have you, where if you're not censoring people or deleting comments for content, you're able to pretty much let them say whatever they say.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's such a fine line we have to walk in terms of letting the community say what it wants to in the way that it wants to and making sure it's a protected community for those that shouldn't or don't want to hear certain elements of the conversation or even just certain words.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the reasons that we'll get out of the way is that that I wanted to have you on, besides the fact that obviously I love you and think that you are fantastically brilliant, is a shameless plug, something we don't usually do, but we wanted to promote the upcoming social media event being hosted by Eastwick on Thursday. For everybody out there, remember to register. But more specifically, the topic for the event is where and how does influence happen? And I wanted to get your take on that topic because I think it's a broad one, and I think it's interesting just to kind of see what comes out of people's mouth first thing.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, influence is actually an important topic to address from a management perspective, but much like many other management terms, it abstracts from the social reality on the ground of what really happens between people and of how people do influence one another. And, you know, really where it starts with is actually intention. You know, what are we trying to accomplish? What is it that our goals are? What's our motivations is a big part of it. And I actually try to not use the term influencer, but the word influence I seem to be okay with. And in fact, generally speaking, now when I talk about influencers, I talk about them in terms of being teachers. And I think it's a much more powerful word because it's really getting to the heart of what we're talking about here, which is helping educate somebody. Helping influence somebody is providing them with knowledge and insights from my perspective, that will help people make their own decisions as opposed to making conclusions and decisions for others relative to what they're going to do. So I still kind of account for free will in my influence model, as opposed to many others who believe influence is all about, you know, creating actions and doing these other pieces.
Mm-hmm. And actually trying to control the influence a lot. I mean, I think one of the things that is sort of, you know, arguably on the cutting edge, but people have been working on for some time, is trying to actually map influence to have some idea of where it's really happening. But I think the more interesting part to me is less about the control of influencers, but actually finding the true microcosm of a community that's happened within the blogosphere, but not necessarily in a user forum. I think people, there's a bit of a disconnect between, oh, these bloggers are in a circle, they connect to one another, they're commenting on each other's blogs. They obviously and clearly know each other, and technology starting to be able to catch up to that. Whereas a user forum, you know, obviously, you know, people are there for a purpose or a product or, you know, a range of products or problems that they need solutions to. So, you know, I think there's a real difference and distinction between the two.
Well, I think it's really important, but at the same time, these are still conversations and exchanges of information and connections that are happening. So, you know, you can choose which area to focus your efforts on, based on perceived ability to generate returns, but that ultimately, if you're a big company and you have the resources to deploy, you know, going against the blogosphere as well as forums is actually probably a really sound strategy to do. But really, it comes down to finding out where are your people? Where are the people you want to talk to?
Absolutely. The tuning in aspect.
Yeah, exactly. So it really starts with understanding who your market is and defining them well, and then being able to go off and understand the language that they're using so that you can identify them and figure out what they're saying and who they are. But you said something actually really important that I want to go back and focus on, because you said, I think maybe I misheard you, but I think you said where influence happened. And I think
happened.
Happens. But I think it's actually important to look at where influence happened. Because
fact, that's true. It's part of it, isn't it?
Huge part, because we can map out where influence has happened previously, and that's a good predictor or indicator of where it might happen again in the future. But, you know, this whole idea of influence also needs to account for a certain amount of serendipity, because there's so many variables that go into, you know, this element of whether or not something goes viral or if it becomes exciting and if it strikes a chord with people. It's really hard to capture that lightning in a bottle, but it is easy to see where it's happened in the past and be able to learn from those and understand the connections that people have. And, of course, look at other things like what is an individual's reach, who are the people they're reaching, and what sort of things has this person done to deserve a good reputation in any given market.
So I have to ask you, do you think that there are any good tools out there that really soundly tell people, you know, based on their market or keywords, where their influencers lie to help point them in the right direction? Because, you know, hearkening back to the educational part of this, we certainly recommend what we call listening tools to folks. But I always love to find out what you might be using to help break through the noise and find the people that are of interest either to you or to the project you're working on.
Well, I'm going to have a two-part, well, maybe four-part, but let's start with two, and we'll see how many we add from there. Answer to this, because the first part is I don't believe that there are any really good tools to tell me about influence. I think there's some wonderful attempts at it. I think there's some really great things out there heading in the right direction, but I still have not seen a great influence measurement tool. And then again, that depends on your definition of influence, because for many people, influence is still reach. And if we're talking about reach, as opposed to the way that I define influence, which is reputation and a lot of the other soft stuff that wraps around that, such as trust and issues.
I think, to me, I think I agree this whole sense of social capital ties in
with
the latter definition.
And when we're really getting to the heart of it and what it means, there are no tools right now that do that well. But if we're talking about reach and if we're talking about the ability to listen, monitor, and discover – You know, obviously Radian 6 and looking at the things that, like, is happening here locally with eCairn and a couple of the other people who are doing some great work in the monitoring side, I think there's been some great progress. And there's certainly some great tools to be able to identify conversations that are happening. But oftentimes, most of those tools, like Radian and these others, are really great at identifying the conversations and where are conversations that got a lot of attention and, you know, changing the variables even in terms of what we're measuring in this regards. But identifying the people who are influencers, you know, that takes time. And the best tool is still the old tool, which is building relationships and knowing your customers. I mean, it's amazing how many companies are starting social media strategies and, you know, they're not thinking to reach out first to their customers. And one of the first things I do with any social media strategy engagement is do two things, really. And one is to survey the employees and find out where are they getting their material from, who do they trust. And that's a very important question to ask, because who do you trust versus where do you get your information?
Knowing that your employees are on your side, or if they're not, why, is so key. They should be your number one evangelists.
Well, and it also can save you millions, depending on the size of the company, millions of dollars in terms of research and other efforts that you would need to undertake if you were to just start from zero and, you know, have a team of four people engaged on this. You know, as soon as you can activate the whole of the company to help you create your early warning radar and to determine where are the influential sources of information and insight, you can get really far ahead. And, of course, the second part is doing the same thing with your customers, trying to figure out where they're paying attention and what they're doing. So there's lots of opportunities if you start taking an integrated and a holistic approach to discover influence and to discover, you know, from an anecdotal standpoint and from the conversational standpoint, where it actually lies within your market.
So taking a somewhat devil's advocate approach, why does influence matter at all, in your opinion?
Well, it's how people ultimately make decisions. I mean, particularly more now than ever with the glut of information that we have. You know, we're really drowning in many ways, and, you know, we have to be able to cut through this stuff more quickly. In looking at, you know, hundreds of comments on a blog post, how do you know which one's really the right ones to believe in? And it's because we know from being a part of these conversations and paying regular attention to the blog who's added value before. So it is important to understand, you know, who are the key players. But it's also important to understand how to approach them and to approach them and say, hey, will you be my brand ambassador? Mm-hmm. Is quite a different approach than coming in and saying, hey, we see what you've been doing out here in this market, and we really value your opinion and would love to find out what you think about this. Would you be willing to be a part of a program to, you know, be an advisory board or something along these lines, like we did last year with the Intel Insider program? You know, it's how we come to these programs that changes the outcomes as much as anything else.
So along those lines, you know, I, you know, fervently love Social Media Club and what it's all about. You want to let our listeners know briefly what it's all about, and specifically after that, I'd love to hear your favorite social media success stories that you may have heard at the recent social media camp.
Oh, wow. The last one's harder than the other ones because I'm mostly spending too much time in theory and in other conversations like this, but we'll try to get it. You know, Social Media Club has been a real labor of love over the last several years, and we're very happy to see that right now it's in somewhere around 100 cities or so around the world and making very strong inroads into Europe now, and it looks like possibly going beyond that even into the Mideast and Asia, and we've got a good strong footprint down in Australia as well. And the reason why is because we really stand for the heart of the values of what we believe social media is about, which is connecting with people and about sharing what we know with each other and helping lift everyone else up. So to that end, we really have four missions in Social Media Club at the heart of it, which is media literacy. From that perspective, we mean helping people understand how to consume as well as produce media, how to know when you're being advertised to, and how to be able to discern, you know, the signal from the noise, really, at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Moving beyond that, of course, one of the key functions that we do with most of our meetings and elsewhere is about sharing our lessons learned. How do we learn from one another so we can continue to have dialogue where people are helping one another? Moving from that into promoting industry standards, which is a very important of this stuff. If, for instance, we didn't have RSS as a standard of information distribution right now, pretty much the industry wouldn't exist. But then there's other important standards, social standards, if you will, such as Creative Commons licensing and even some of the stuff that the archive's doing and Electronic Frontier Foundation. And then, of course, we get into the technical standards of OAuth and OpenID and all these other things that to many lay people really means nothing. And it shouldn't really mean anything because it's the infrastructure that the networks rely on. But understanding that having these common standards is what makes it all possible, makes it, you know, Facebook Connect, able to connect into DIG and all these other things, is just huge, and it's so important for enabling the future that we see. And then finally, discussions on issues of ethics and, you know, making sure that we're having some of those more difficult questions about what are the implications and what are the consequences of what's happening. And what we do is we get people together in person around the world in local groups, and we work to connect those groups online and really kind of be champions for ensuring that social media is evolving in the way that is best for everyone and at the same time evolving in a way that allows for multiple people to input so that we can find ways to respect each other's cultural heritage and not end up with just a single echo chamber here.
Yeah, and we should note that there is a social media channel right here on Blog Talk Radio, so folks should find that, listen to some archives. I took part for the first time today in a couple of discussions this morning, very enlightening, and I think it'll give you a very good sense about kind of the level of thinking that's going on around social media. But I want to get back to potential social media success stories that you heard at the recent social media camp. I'm so curious.
Well, it's really interesting because we really had a mix. We were focusing social media camp on small businesses more than large, trying to get this in the hands of, you know, everyday people who can really benefit from it. And so we actually had people there who were, you know, running a department of a larger company all the way down to someone who's doing voiceover work and trying to get more awareness for themselves doing the voiceover work. So a lot of the people we were dealing with at social media camp were really, and I don't mean it in a bad way, but were kind of newbies trying to learn this stuff and figure out where to start.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I spent most of my day, in people who had questions. And certainly there was a lot of talk around people who were successful finding jobs through social media and the importance of having that online resume via LinkedIn and some of these elements of actually having an established reputation and how important it was for them to find new careers and new jobs and even new client opportunities, of course. So unfortunately, from social media camp, I don't have too many great examples. But
it sounds
like
you educated some people to get them going in one direction or another.
Yeah, exactly. That was the majority of my day there in New York during Internet Week. And it was fantastic because there's really, I think the real success is the fact that this has become so mainstream and that so many, you know, average everyday people who have a small business, you know, I mean, there's one woman we spoke to has a business called Scribble Mats, and she, it's just this product for children, right? And so now she's looking at this as an opportunity where her site before was a traditional kind of web one static e-commerce driven stuff, where now she's looking at integrating a blog and creating a program to start talking to mommy bloggers and maybe even, you know, talking with them about what the next products are going to look like.
That's
so
awesome.
I mean, it's a huge shift in thinking, but not a success story yet.
Yeah, we actually have had some success with a company similar market-wise, company that creates custom children's books and other materials for kids called Frecklebox. And it actually started from a printing company that just started kind of doing these one-off little books for their own children. And other kids saw these things and thought, oh, I really want that. And they've partnered with authors and that sort of thing. And so we've helped them through their process. And it's really fun because I think at that at that level, there's an openness that there isn't always at, you know, the higher echelons.
Yeah, but, you know, it was just occurring to me, actually, one of the biggest success stories was actually our host venue, the Roger Smith Hotel. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Uh-huh.
But they're quickly becoming known as the social media go-to place in New York because they just have taken an approach where they have a couple of really great, smart guys who are there, you know, engaging via Twitter, engaging via blogs, and, excuse me one sec, and using it as a communications channel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, literally they have a blogger rate for the hotel. So if you're a blogger, you get a special rate at the Roger Smith Hotel in New York. And they've just done some really tremendous things. And they're using a multi-channel approach. So not only are they, you know, using blogs and Twitter and, you know, discounts and talking to people and watching for people who say, hey, I'm coming to New York, I wonder where to stay, and responding to them and inviting them in to stay at their hotel. But they're sponsoring events like Social Media Camp and getting engaged in the community and coming out to all these other places. And I got to tell you, they do some mean bacon.
The real reason you were there.
Well, they have a really good happy hour deal. I don't know if it's ongoing or not, but, you know, while we were there, they brought a massive plate of bacon along with $1 draft beers. And
Is it in Midtown?
Yeah, Midtown.
On Madison Avenue?
East side on Lex. I think it's like 47th, 48th and Lex.
We will definitely get a link up to that on our website, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and you can look at the site. It's really interesting, and I was just going to comment on that as well. Really,
yeah, go for it.
It's important that you go to Roger Smith Hotel, and they'll have a .com, and they have a traditional website, you know, for the hotel and travel property. But they also have this social media portal that includes a lot of video, interviews, mentions, of course, the Twitter feed, and so much else. So they've actually, you know, taking the approach where, hey, we've got traditional clients who will come in and look at this, and then at the same time, we know other people are going to really be looking for that personal recommendation and that personal referral, which goes back to our earlier conversation and why I think they're using it right. You know, they're engaging people to tell their stories. And when you see somebody you know and trust, like Chris Brogan or Steve Garfield or anyone else, who's actually vouching for a given hotel like they are here for the Roger Smith, you know, that's what helps us make decisions, and that's ultimately why influence really matters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we talk about, I spoke with Kristen Smith a few weeks ago from the Word of Mouth Marketing Association and talking about how these conversations that we've had traditionally only face-to-face or on the telephone have now translated onto the web and in ways that we may not have expected. You know, I'm not sure the developers of Twitter thought it would be used exactly the way it has been, in the same way that Alexander Graham Bell thought that the telephone would be used to, what, broadcast symphonies?
Yeah.
I think you used this as your example at the last Silicon Valley Social Media Club event, and I find that a fascinating example of how things don't always turn out the way you want them to, but they can still be an interesting product in the end.
Yeah, and well, I mean, there's so many things in that. I think one of the biggest challenges really comes down to the core issue that we're dealing with in management today, which is this idea of control and this illusion that we can control everything and control every outcome, and that markets are petri dishes in which what we do is the only thing that matters, as opposed to understanding that we're entering an open ecosystem with our markets and that anything could happen. And in fact, if we try to control too much, you're ultimately preventing some of the more interesting and valuable things from ever possibly happening as a result of trying to control it. Versus the idea of how do we design for serendipity in our processes of engagement? How do we design for an open conversation where, you know, somebody maybe at 1 minute saying something we really don't like or we really don't want to hear, but the next minute they're giving us the best idea ever that could completely change the direction of our company. But, you know, in trying to control those voices, those dissenting voices in particular, or the critical voices, we often miss the real opportunity in that that could be a massive breakthrough.
Well, I want to make sure that I ask you about this. We only have about 5 minutes left, but you got some notoriety for auctioning off your consulting time on eBay. And, of course, we have to ask, who gave you the idea? A great one, by the way. And or what gave you the idea, and what was the end result?
Well, one good result, one lesson learned, I'll call it instead.
Okay.
The one in the UK, just up front, is that I didn't realize that the way I had set it up, because I just copied the prior event and updated the text and everything. I've done this now twice, where I was traveling to a given town, in this case DC and London, and I said, well, I'm going to be there, and I'll probably do some free lunch meetings anyways, so why not try to auction off a couple hours of my time and, see what happens and see if I can get some money for it, because it would be a lot better to get, $100 or $50 for a lunch meeting rather than doing it for free or ending up paying for it, which is typically what we've been doing anyways when we're traveling for speaking. And when I did the one for London, I actually set it up wrong and no one in London could bid on it.
Oh, no.
And I only found out like the day before it was over when I actually talked to somebody at a very large company who was trying to bid and couldn't. So we weren't able to correct that in time to make that work. But the idea really came from a couple of things that are very important in terms of how we're looking at the world, and it is that different perspective that opened up that opportunity. And what it came down to was that in setting up our new consulting shop, this ad hocnium that we have, I was looking at it from perspective of we've got to make it easier for people to buy, and that this is really the shift. And in fact, Steve Rubell's been talking about this a lot lately in his presentations, and John Hagel's actually working on a book by this name about the power of pull and what it meant to pull people in as opposed to pushing stuff on them. And so that's kind of been my philosophy for a while now in approaching social media and a lot of other things. And what I saw it was that putting this up in this auction format made it easier for people to buy my time. And my time is primarily what I'm selling these days as a consultant. So it was really driven by a philosophical attitude that opened that up. And then I just realized that, hey, I'm going to be here anyway, so let's do this. And as I've been talking to more people about it, there has been some interest in it. Many people beat up and say, look what your fair market rate is. You only got $160 for what was essentially 3.5 hours in D.C. And I'm like, well, it was $160 more than I got. It was PR. It was a really great relationship with a great woman who ended up winning and somebody we're friends with and is now working on starting Social Media Club Bethesda, of all things.
Fantastic.
And, there's all these other, great outcomes that came as a result of it. So it wasn't only about the cash. Of course, the other thing being is that I focused it on, hey, I'm only going to be here for this time period in this town. So I limited the market of buyers somewhat in it. If I had done it where I was auctioning off my time on anywhere in the world for a remote, which is actually probably one of the things that's going to be coming up soon, I think we'd have a little better audience and end up with a little better financial result. But the main thing, again, is helping people buy and finding mechanisms through which we can create new awareness and engage people.
And I think that's so true even within, I'm in a communications agency environment, and same issues, in terms of selling to your selling, for the lack of a better term, really it's better servicing your current clients to make sure that they're doing things that are clever and engaging and, not typically, information out only, but, that there is a push-pull between the two, two sides of the coin.
Yep.
And
well, there's another really important part here that I want to put out because it's important for clients and others to think about. I was willing to completely fail. I was willing to be utterly embarrassed and get zero bids. And I had to be willing to do that in order to be able to take those actions.
Yeah. And that's what makes you a very cool guy. I have one other question that I wanted to get to that we're not going to have time for. And my colleague Kimberly asked it. And the question is, knowing how much you've touched on this in the past, how do you think social networks are impacting the digital divide today in this country? Maybe you can give us a few words on that.
Yeah, that's really big. Well, as I've been saying a lot, there's actually a new digital divide, and it's amongst people who are actually online, and it's between those who know how to find information and those who don't.
Because I have
friends who spend an hour looking for something, and I can walk up behind them and go, oh, that's easy. You just search for blah, blah, blah here in this different search engine, and it'll come up, and literally I find results on the first page, where many of my friends and people I know who aren't as digitally literate, can go 10, 20, 30 minutes without finding the same resource. But what it's done is because the awareness of how to engage and how to use these networks is so much more widespread, I think that it's made the premise of engaging via social networks on Facebook and other places more accessible to more people. Whereas before it looked like it was the realm of only those techies and geeky people, we see today more than ever grandmothers and World War II veterans and so many other people who are using these technologies to stay in touch with friends and, you know, to find real social connections with one another, that it's made it much more compelling for people to find a reason to get online, to get engaged in these networks.
On that note, Chris, I have to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us. Like I said, I knew it was going to be hard for us just to go half an hour.
Sure.
And I want to thank everyone who's listened to Break Through the Noise this week with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Next week, our guest is Brian Halligan, co-founder and CEO of HubSpot. That's 1 week from today at 12 noon Pacific. As always, you can keep up with the latest on our show and Eastwick in general at blogs.eastwick.com. Have a great weekend, everyone.